I'm Yardley.
And I'm Zibby.
And these are the mini-sodes.
They're bite-sized
stories about
true crime.
That's it. We sit down with four canine officers, including our own Detective Dan, to hear how they bond with their elite animals. We also get the lowdown on the time Detective Dave ended up as a chew toy. Today on Small Town Dicks, we get to talk about
doggies.
Doggies.
Dogs.
Dan, why don't you do the introductions today?
So we have Darren.
Hi, I'm Darren.
Brian.
Hello, I'm Brian.
And Justin.
How's it going?
Great to have you guys here.
Thanks for having us.
You forgot your brother.
Yeah, we have Dave too.
Oh, Dave's a chew toy, so we'll get to that.
I'm a victim.
We'll start off with all of us here worked with patrol dogs, and you have detection dogs like drug detection, bomb detection.
Our dogs are trained in tracking, obedience, and handler protection, and they bite.
They grab.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, they grab.
They don't have opposable thumbs, so they grab with their mouth.
Correct.
And what breed of dog are we talking about?
The dog that I worked was a German Shepherd from Germany.
Is that the standard with canines?
We like the breed, but some of the other handlers, such as Darren, mm-hmm. you've got...
My current dog, Janko, is, we think he has a little bit of Malinois in him. And Malinois is a little bit smaller of a dog. A little bit quicker, but we chose German Shepherds because we've had such good luck with them at our small talent agency. And during that time, we just found that they were able to keep their head in the game, so to speak, focus more and have a lot more endurance to just keep on going. And we take these dogs into, I mean, it's not just the tracking and protection, but it's also a lot of PR work with these dogs. We'll take them to schools. We'll take them to special events and talk about our dogs. People will pet on our dogs and things like that. So.
And is your dog from Germany also, Janko?
Janko's actually from Holland. So I talked to him in Dutch.
No kidding.
Do you?
Yeah.
And Dan, you spoke to your dog in German, right?
Yeah.
So do you get these dogs when they're puppies? You can't possibly. I mean, by the time they get to you, so they're shipped here from Europe. At what stage in their life?
It varies.
Yeah, it definitely does. Like we got Janko when he was four. We can get dogs as young as a year old. It just all varies. We have different vendors that we'll go through. And the vendor has either kennels over in Europe or goes over to Europe themselves and will pick out dogs from the dog clubs over there. Because dog sport over there is like college football is to us here. And I guess that's the best way to equate it.
Did you say dog sport?
Yeah, there's different dog sports that the dogs take part in and get what they call a title on the dog. And a title could be in Schutzen, which stands for protection dog. So these competitions and different events have been around forever. They take the dogs out there, show them that the dog can track and get different levels of titles put on these dogs. It would be similar to like playing in single A ball, double A ball, or triple A ball in the pros. And so they just get this title put on them and then they select the dogs and bring them over here. And then we'll go usually to the vendor and test the dogs and pick out the dogs that we feel would work best at our department and bring the dog back. Our small town agency does a lot of bonding with the dog because we believe that the bond is very important with the handler. And you got to make this dog trust what you say. He's not going to get hurt. And you also got to start trusting the dog too.
And the dogs usually haven't been here very long when we first get them. When we went and picked out his newest dog, they had only been in the U.S. for like a week and a half. It was shy of 2 weeks. So they're
jet lagged.
Yeah, big time. I mean, his dog's from Slovakia, right? Mm-hmm. And so he had spent time there with his dog group or whoever his primary trainer was. And then he was selected by our broker who has a kennel in the Netherlands. So the dog was transferred from Slovakia to the Netherlands and then did some training back there. They sent a video to the broker that we selected the dog from. They say, yeah, that dog looks good. Bring it to the U.S. Dog's in Indiana for just less than 2 weeks. And then you've got all these weird people showing up, speaking a different language. They're eating different food. And we go out there and we're doing all of these different testing things to find out if they're the right dog for our department. And so there's countless numbers of dogs in these kennels. I mean, there's a couple hundred.
Yeah.
And we test a ton of them. And there really are only a few that even through that stressful transition over the last few weeks, still perform well. And so that's a pretty good indicator that, you know, when we get this dog back, it can acclimate to what the new environment's going to be for the long term, that they're probably going to do well in the environment that we're going to expose them to.
So what's the value in having a dog on your team? You know, what can a dog do that a human can't?
They bring a whole new set of senses to the equation. You know, humans primarily rely on our eyes to see stuff. It's our primary go-to sense, where dogs do that. They'll use their eyes first, ear second, nose third, but we have trained them and conditioned them to use their nose, given that it's so much better than ours, to help find people. Same idea with detection dogs on the other side of the canine world. They use their noses to help find stuff. And so their ability to use their nose to find what we want them to find is the biggest advantage we can get out on the street as far as finding bad guys and or property left behind that has human scent on it. There's studies done and reports that the man hours saved by a canine program or having a dog on scene versus officers.
Can you give an example?
Yeah, early on in our agency, we had an alarm that patrol kept going to over and over again, and they would search the building, taking, you know, an hour to check this large like shopping center type building, and they never found the guy. Eventually they called a canine in, and what, it was 10-15 minutes, they find the bad guy in there after they'd gone through it several times before.
Oh wow.
In a case like that, if they don't know the guy, how do they know how to tell the dog who the dog is sniffing for? I mean, do you have to find something first to introduce that scent to?
We don't have to. We've trained them to find human scent. You can do what that is. It's scent discrimination, and there's a method for that, but we don't always have something that the dog can smell that belongs to, say, the bad guy. And so we've had them train, and we continually train them to find human scent, and specifically the enhanced scent is what we call it, but you'll hear it called fear scent. When you're scared, you actually put off a different smell. Adrenaline's pumping, you're scared, and the dogs can actually pick up on that scent as opposed to, you know, just us sitting here in this room right now.
Well, and I remember Dave saying to me that he described the dog's ability to smell. He said, so if you make stew, Yardley, you smell stew, but the dog smells meat, potatoes, carrots, celery, onions, parsnip, garlic, salt, pepper, every single ingredient that goes into the stew. And
that's a really good visual analogy.
Thank you.
Now, I read somewhere that the dog is an aggressive signal or a passive signal. So like when the dog actually finds the thing it's looking for, the human or the object, how do they signal you? Is it a bark? And do those signals vary based on what it is they're looking for?
I guess for each of the dogs, there's a multitude of behaviors that you can observe. Detection dogs, it's a little bit more specific in a passive versus an active alert. Like if they locate drugs in a specific location, they may paw at it or what have you. For the patrol dogs, you'll see behavior changes throughout the duration of your search, whether you're tracking or whatnot. So it could be their tail moves different, their hair comes up, the head comes up from the ground. Little indicators that they're, you know, on the scent, or they're getting closer to the source of the scent. In terms of like a building search or something, if somebody's concealed behind a door or in a garbage dumpster or what have you, our dogs are trained for an active alert, which would be to bark. Some of them, they have a little bit more active behaviors, like they may jump or what have you, but predominantly the bark is the alert. So for ours, when they're searching a building, somebody's completely concealed and they'll find the source of the odor, then they'll bark to indicate to the handler, I need to get into that location.
The more you work and train with your dog, the sooner you start to recognize little things your dog does that are very specific to him. And they might say, hey, we're on scent right now, or I'm just going to take you for a walk and really, we're really not on anything.
So you start noticing behavior in your dog that lets you know if we're going to encounter a bad guy or we need to go to plan B.
Yeah, that makes sense to me, that it's just another reason why it's so crucial that you have a real relationship with them. So can you talk about how you build that relationship once you do get a dog and what that bonding process looks like? Is there a very strict protocol?
For our dogs, we do a one-month bonding period for the handler and the dog, and that's, like they said before, to establish the relationship. The training is pretty intensive, going from a sport dog that we've gotten from Europe to transitioning them to police work, and with that comes, you know, a heavy amount of training. So we want the dog to develop trust with the new handler. They have to become partners. And so, you know, there are different ways to do that. We don't expose them to compulsion. We don't do a lot
What's
of
compulsion?
Compulsion, giving them a correct for a behavior. So when we have a new dog and a new handler, we want them to just get to know each other, acclimate. We want the dog to get familiar with the new environment that they're living in, the food that they're eating, who their primary caretaker is. The handler will take them out, expose them to many surfaces, and just get them familiar with being together and being attached to the line.
So is that like snuggling and watching movies together?
Does he get to come inside the house?
For the patrol dogs, no house time. We want them to stay acclimated. Yeah, these dogs, from the time they're born, they're kenneled outside. So when we bring them here, they don't know any different, other than if you start to bring them in, then obviously they're like 70 degrees is better than rainy and 40.
This is more fun.
Yeah. But you know, there are different techniques to assist with the bonding period, feeding by hand initially, things like that, just getting them used to who their primary caretaker is. And then once that 1 month has passed, then the training, it kicks off and there's a little bit of a reality check for the dog. Things aren't, it's not the honeymoon period anymore.
I get talked a lot about the bonding because right now I'm going through it with my brand new dog. And so we just got a dog at the beginning of April and brought him back. You know, a lot of it is finding what they like and basically what turns them on as far as wanting to play and things like that. He loves playing with tennis balls, the rubber ball. And so a lot of times I'll take him out on walks and then we'll stop and just play ball and continue on walks. I call it the walk and talk. I talk to him, let him hear my voice how it is normally, and take him on all different surfaces. We've been to kids' playgrounds now and walked across the creaky bridge that Dave usually falls on. But so you take the dog on that and just let him know that, hey, wherever I take you, you aren't going to get hurt. You can trust me. And so, you know, and sometimes the dogs will kind of balk at going on things like that. But if you take them up there enough and just sit there and have patience with them, and that's the big thing I think we all can say is have patience with the dog, then your bonding and your trust is going to be built just so strong with the dog.
That's incredible. Dan, I remember you saying when you had Fido, your dog, that part of the training process was that you would actually get up, you'd set the alarm for 3 a.m. to take Fido out to go and get used to the dark and walking around, and you would set little obstacle courses for him too?
Not at first. Once we started really training, I would set things up as part of our training. But my initial, I wanted to have a tight bond with the dog, and I would set the alarm for 3 a.m. and go spend time with him in the dark. I would sit with him in his kennel and talk to him just to let him know that I was his guy and he was my guy.
I love that.
So we'd really love to hear your favorite capture stories. And Dan, I'd love to hear your favorite capture story involving Fido, the legendary canine.
I've got a few. And I mean, all of us have so many favorites.
No doubt.
I think one of my favorite captures with Fido was we have a mutual aid agreement with our neighboring city.
It sounds obvious, but just tell us what you mean by a mutual aid agreement with your neighboring city.
Mutual aid is a reciprocity agreement between our agencies. In our area, we have four: us, the bigger city just to our west, county sheriff, and state police. So mutual aid basically says maybe the state police tonight doesn't have a dog working and they have a bad guy run from them. They will call our agency. We will send our dog to help them with the understanding that maybe tomorrow night we don't have a dog working and we're going to be calling them, asking them to come assist us.
Nothing is more satisfactory than going to their city and finding somebody for them. So working graveyard, it's the middle of the night. It's zero dark 30. And I'm scanning the radio and I hear this other jurisdiction there in pursuit of a motorcycle. And I know that I'm the only dog working in the county that night. So I automatically start heading that way because I know I'm going to to be going over there eventually. The neighboring city calls over and requests me formally. So now I'm really moving. I'm lights and siren. And this stolen motorcycle crashes at the end of the freeway off ramp. And so I'm heading to this area. It's probably an 8-minute drive at the pace that I'm going because I was on the other side of the city. I get there. I get to the end of the off ramp. I see the motorcycle there and the pursuing officer is just standing there waiting for me to show up, which I actually really appreciated because
he knew you had a canine.
He knew I had a canine and he wasn't going to contaminate this track with his own scent because his adrenaline's going too. Right. So I wait there. He gives me a clothing description. It was a stolen motorcycle and a white male had taken off in a northwest direction.
Through brush or down city streets or?
So where he crashed, there were a lot of railroad tracks there. So you've got the gravel of these railroad track beds. And then to the west of that, you've got these industrial buildings that have big fenced yards, large trucks, things of that nature, and then some empty fields also that have some blackberry briars. So the first surface that we encounter is gravel. And gravel's tricky sometimes because the scent will blow off the gravel. And we actually call it trailing, not tracking, because you're working this blown off scent.
I'm trying to just put that in terms that's easy for me to understand a little bit. Like the scent blows off gravel in what, the way like water flows over rocks or?
So
how does that, why? Why doesn't it just trap the scent?
The scent that the dog is picking up are these dead skin cells that fall off the human body and they land on these rocks and these are microscopic little skin cells and the wind will actually blow those things off the rocks.
And gravel, because it's looser, is just not conducive to sticking.
Yeah, that scent will stick to grass.
Mm. A lot of times, too, when they're tracking, we refer to it in the vegetation, and they're smelling the ground disturbance. If you actually were to go out to a nice lush grass and put a footstep down, and then you could get down on your hands and knees and smell the footstep, it's going to smell different from the grass that's next to it because it's all the little microorganisms trying to work its way back up.
Well, and, it's like mowing your yard. You know, yeah. Fresh cut grass, they smell that on a footstep.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Oh, wow.
But the environment can affect how the skin rafts stay. I mean, like you said, if it's a dry surface, then it's not bonding by any means. But if you've had a fresh rain, then by all means, the skin rafts can stick right there. They won't continue to blow. So it just depends on the conditions at the time.
Hot weather will kill the skin rafts. Cold weather will kill the skin rafts also. My perfect tracking condition is about 50 degrees and a little light mist, maybe some fog.
Yeah.
It keeps, I mean, if I could order it up.
You described that like a nice wine.
Yeah, you did.
So anyway, so we're trailing on this rock surface and we go a few hundred yards and we're heading in this direction and we encounter a backpack and I'm like, okay, this is good. So now we know we're on the right track and now we're able to kind of pinpoint where we need to put our perimeter. So we station our perimeter around and now we're just going to let the dog work. So we keep moving in the same direction. All of a sudden we change direction and we start heading southwest. So from northwest, now we're going southwest and we encounter a building with a fenced in yard and there's a large like beverage truck, you know, with the slide up doors on the side that's parked in this yard. And just south of that yard are some blackberry bushes. And there's a path, like a sidewalk in between the building and the briars. So we get to right about where that truck is. And I start seeing some distinct behavior from my dog that I recognize. I'm like, okay, keep your eyes peeled. Homeboy's around here. And we take a few more steps. We go down to the path and Fido just launches into the blackberries. And I fish him out of there, and he's got a motorcycle helmet in his mouth. The officer who had pursued him said that's the helmet that the guy had.
Oh.
So we continue west along this path, and
he's leaving you a breadcrumb trail of his belongings.
So I continue down this path, but I'm not seeing the same behavior out of my dog. We're leaving the scent. We're not in it anymore. So I...
Can you be more specific? You're not seeing the same behavior? Meaning he feels like, okay, that was my get. Now I'm done.
No, he's just not on human scent anymore.
Oh.
And he's like, oh, we're just going for a walk. Yeah. We're going for a walk. And so, okay, I'm gonna circle back, and I come back to the truck, motorcycle, helmet area again to say, all right, I know there's scent here, so let's get him back on the scent. And we do the same thing. He goes a little ways down the path, and then we're going for a walk again. Yeah, I'm so confused. So I've got an officer who is up on an overpass, and he's shining a spotlight down onto the top of this truck. And I'm like, maybe the guy's like on the truck and he's shining it down. There's nobody there. I get somebody into the lot where that truck is. And I'm like, maybe the guy broke into the truck. I have the guy do a walk around. He's like, there's nobody in this truck. So now I'm like, okay, well, I messed up somewhere. I'm going to go back. We start over again. We do another circle around this field and there's nothing. So I found a hole in the fence a little ways to the north. I go into that yard and I walk him around this truck and my dog's going crazy. And I'm like, he's here somewhere.
Crazy barking or you just...
He's barking. He's super animated. And my dog's alert. When I knew the bad guy was nearby, he circled to the right.
Fido circling to the right, is that his own personal way of letting you know something's up, or was he trained to circle to the right?
That's just his thing, and I tried to train it out of him because he would tie me in knots. He was so quick. Other dogs have different alerts, but when he got excited, he would circle to the right, and in turn, I would get excited too because I knew a bad guy was nearby.
But where? Like, we've looked, we've tried to pull up the doors on the side, nothing. And so my dog actually got on the ground and started crawling under the truck, and one of the other guys shines his flashlight, and this guy is standing on the rear axle. There was a little area above the rear axle below the trailer part of this truck. The bad guy was standing on the axle, like all balled up, and that's where he was. He was hiding there the whole time.
Underneath the car.
Yeah, so I start giving him commands like, hey, my dog's going to extricate you unless you come out. And he eventually did. He came out, and it was the guy.
That is so impressive.
So impressive.
So, Brian, I hear you have a really funny capture story with your dog, Bronco.
There's just so many captures that stick out. But since Dave is here, we'll talk about when he covered me on a track once. So this guy, Marty, that Dave knows very well, he sees him driving a car through our town, and the guy's got warrants out for his arrest, and he's a frequent flyer and a runner. This guy runs every time. It's always a pursuit. He always bails from the car. I happen to be in the area, and...
You remember? We were sitting there parked off this main drag, and we were talking about, it's kind of a dead night, and I remember Marty drives by, and I was like, hey, get ready, here it comes, and I run him, and like, he's wanted, and you and I just basically pulled out right behind him and caught up with him maybe 3 blocks down the road.
And it started from there. So we initiated a traffic stop with this van. It turns into a pursuit. It doesn't go very long, but we end up in a really huge apartment complex. And this guy goes bombing through the complex. And being the canine, I got to be number one because we anticipate this guy's going to jump out and bail. And we've all been there. It's one of the perks of the job is you always get to be the first in the chase. And so Dave and I chase Marty through this complex, and eventually he comes to a dead end, and I'm anticipating the driver to bail out of the driver's side. So my vehicle's positioned at a point of advantage where both myself and the dog could see the driver's side door pop open. So the van comes to a stop. I throw open the door, I grab the dog, and I'm looking and I'm making an announcement and the door's not opening. The guy bails out of the passenger side, which I can't see because I'm positioned so I can watch the driver's side. And Dave calls out that the guy's running. This is real close to a fence line that goes into a residential neighborhood. And so I see Dave as he's yelling, the guy's running. I cut the dog loose. Thankfully, Dave stops.
Like I'm supposed to do, right?
Like he's supposed to do. The dog goes blowing past Dave, but this guy's already got a jump on us. We're not far from the fence. So he makes it up and over the fence. And
the thing was about 8 to 10 feet tall. It wasn't your standard 6 foot wooden fence. It was big.
Yeah, it was huge. And there's a ditch on the other side. So the other side of the fence was an even deeper drop. So
like a moat.
It was probably.
It's not one of those where
he would.
Typically, I've seen these guys, they take their dog and they'll throw him over a 6 foot fence if they know what's on the other side. On the other side of this is another 2 or 3 foot drop. So possibly his dog's going to be dropping 10 to 12 feet.
Right.
And he's not going to throw his dog in that situation. So
sure.
We had to find a different way.
So the dog's freaking out because he can just, this guy's not making very much progress in this. It's all blackberries on the other side of the fence. And so he's just crashing.
Again with the blackberries.
Yes. They grow like
invasive species.
Yeah, like a weed out here. And so the dog's freaking out and he's circling around by the fence. He wants to get to the other side. I'm kicking the damn fence. I can't get a board loose. So I put the dog on a down.
What does it mean to put the dog on a down?
Putting the dog on a down means having it lay down wherever it is, and it's absolute. When I give the command, it's got to follow my command and not move. There's one other command that is absolute, and that's the out command. And that's if a dog is bitten something, someone, it has to out when I tell it to.
As in let go of the bad guy.
Yes.
Sorry to interrupt, Brian. Please keep going.
So I tell Dave to come over to the fence. I'm like, if we kick at the same time in the same spot, we could probably punch through. I can get the dog into the ditch and then the guy's on his own in the blackberries. It was a great idea initially. Dave was all for it and he came over and we're both yelling at the guy on the other side. At the same time, we're laying boots to this fence. Now, if you imagine from the dog's perspective, this is almost replicates handler protection it's scenario.
Violent. It was violent.
And so for part of our standards and in our training, we do what's called handler protection, where you have bad guy and handler, and they're having communication and the dog is on a down and he's not supposed to break his down. And then you simulate an attack on the handler. The dog gets the bite command, comes up, engages a bad guy. So from Bronco's vantage point on a down and Dave standing next to me, we're having an argument is what the dog thinks. We're both yelling and kicking the fence. And so Bronco thought that Dave was coming after me. And so he comes over and just makes very light contact with Dave. Can I call it light contact?
That is erroneous. It is not light at all. I still have the scar.
In that instant, Dave regretted ever talking shit to Bronco.
Yeah. Ever. He did.
Because I used to call Bronco, I'd call him a gummer, that he was a soft biter. Bronco's soft. Your dog is soft. Knowing that I had tremendous respect for this dog. And it was, if somebody ran for me, I want Bronco or Cyril coming to help. And then later on, it was Fido. But Bronco laid into me, protecting Brian.
I probably wouldn't put it that way. He very lightly made contact with his lower leg. Well, I guess it was the thigh area, right?
He clamped down on my thigh and drug me over a waist-high bush and basically tackled
this
me.
This is...
Yes, Bronco.
This is shock talking. That's what shock is explaining the story.
It seems like karma after dissing Bronco for so long.
In any event, Bronco comes up. He grabs a hold of Dave's thigh. He gets him by the leg. And so immediately I go to out Bronco because I'm thinking, oh, crap. And Dave grabs Bronco's face with both hands and is screaming at the dog and pulling him off.
I'm giving him the out command,
so
too.
Bronco goes from I'm getting a hold of the bad guy to now I'm in a fight. So he's holding on a little bit tighter now.
Can I quote what yes. I was told? I'm sitting there looking at this land shark is what it feels to me.
My leg
is in a vice, it feels like. And I am screaming, honestly, I'll own it. I was screaming like a little girl that just had her Halloween candy stolen. It hurts like...
Nobody's business.
It hurt really bad. There's tons of pressure. And when you feel the canine teeth, the big teeth, when they puncture your skin and then sink into muscle, it is an experience. So I'm giving him the out command and Brian stands over me and he goes, dude, you got to relax. Stop fighting him. And I go, there's a fucking dog on my leg. Get him off me. I can't relax. So I finally relaxed to the point where Bronco recognized like, okay, I'm going to get outed here. And Brian's doing the best he can. But Bronco recognizes that I'm a resisting suspect and he wasn't going to let go until I wasn't tense anymore. So he lets go and I kind of go to scoot away thinking this is my out and Bronco latches back on.
Oh, man.
No, it wasn't a rebite. He had not completely released.
I got 4 puncture marks in my leg.
So Dave has a hold of the dog. Dog's in the fight. He's on the bite. He doesn't want to let go. I'm telling Dave to stop pulling on the dog so I could get the dog to out. So Dave's literally sliding his feet, scooting backwards, pulling the dog. He's trying to pull away from the dog. So the dog's doing the back end down, humping backwards. And I'm telling Dave, stop, just hold still for a second. And it seems like this is an eternity when you have a 90-pound shepherd holding on to you. But it wasn't that long. And what ends up happening is Dave trips over a tree root and falls backwards onto the ground. And I kid you not, he says, okay. And he stops and the dog comes off.
And is the bad guy on the other side just laughing?
We can still hear him making his way through this brush.
He's like swimming through the thickest blackberries you can imagine. And he's not going very far, but he's just working his way through. And by the time this is over with Dave and I, I'm asking, you okay? Yeah, I'm fine. And he's like, go get that son of a bitch. So I hop over the fence. I can't see the guy anymore. I can see he's made it over a chain link fence into a residential neighborhood and he's gone. So I'm trying to set up a perimeter. Dave's going into shock. He's asking for an ambulance. And I end up getting my dog around this fence into the residential neighborhood. I end up getting a really good track going probably 2-3 blocks away from where the pursuit ended. And we get into a backyard. And now I've got a rookie officer with me. And he doesn't know what's going on. He's just following the guy with the dog. And we get into this backyard. And I remember Bronco is exactly as they've described with their dogs, like just super animated and circling. And there's a shed and a couple of trees and not much else in this large backyard. So I could see it's empty. The dog goes in, clears the shed, comes out, but he doesn't want to leave the area. I'm trying to redirect him, check over here, check over here. He's just circling, circling, circling. And so I'm looking around and this one of the trees in the yard is massive. I mean, it's so high up and the trunk is huge. Well, Bronco's barking and just circling the tree and I'm shining my light. I don't see anything at first. And then I just catch with my light on a sneaker, like a shift of something. I look and I see the guys up in this tree. And so we end up waiting him out and make a couple announcements and he gets tired. He comes down and we get him into custody without further incident. So the good thing was we caught the guy. The wrong guy got bit in this instance. But I just want to say this. I've worked 3 dogs and we've bit a fair amount of people and they all have a pretty high level of screaming at the time. And Dave, quite honestly, has screamed the loudest in my entire career than anybody else that got bit.
I didn't expect a blue-on-blue incident that night either. I was in shock.
Dan, you had Fido first, and then you had to give him to Justin. Tell us about that.
I had Fido for about a year and a half, a little over a year and a half, and I had an eye surgery that didn't go so well. It was painful to come home and see my dog in the backyard wanting to work, and I couldn't go to work. So I resigned from the canine team. It was hard. It was really hard because you become so close to the dog.
Yeah, that sounds heartbreaking.
Justin, tell us briefly that story of when Dan had to hand Fido off to you because it's quite, I've heard it, and it's really poignant and kind of extraordinary because of the dog's behavior.
Yeah, so I remember I actually put in for the canine unit the same time Dan did. I hadn't been at the agency long enough to qualify, but I went through it to gain experience of this testing process we do. And I was interested in it. I was actually there for Brian's first bite with his first dog. I was brand new. It was the day before I left for the police academy and we get in a car chase. His dog bites the bad guy. This is the greatest thing ever. I want to do it.
Said both of us.
Yeah. And so anytime I got an opportunity to, I exposed myself to canine. So I tested with Dan, not expecting, not qualified to get the spot. Dan got Fido and went to work and I was next in line, or I hoped I was next in line. Then Dan has his eye procedure. And I'll never forget, Dan calls me, maybe a month into the recovery, month and a half, something like that. I get a phone call, I'm on my days off, and I was like, why is Dan calling me? And Dan and I have done stuff outside of work, but I knew he had this eye thing. So I answer the phone, and he basically tells me kind of his plan with Fido and what he's thinking and why, kind of in the hopes and the assumption that I'll be the next handler, kind of giving me that heads up beforehand. And I remember being way excited. and like, well, what just happened? But at the same time, I can't imagine having to go through, you know, that decision process and making a decision like that after all the bonding and training and success you have with these dogs and make what I think we'd all agree is the right decision, even though it's the hardest one to make.
Sure.
Yeah.
So he explains it to me. And I think the next day or two, it became official through the agency. Anyway, I ended up getting Fido and picking him up from Dan's house one afternoon. And that was kind of it.
What I remember the most is watching my best buddy walk away from me. So Justin backed his truck up into my driveway and we're piling dog supplies in another truck and he's got his tailgate down and I bring Fido out to the front of the house and Fido, we didn't even say a word to him. He just jumped into the back of Justin's truck and laid down and was like, let's go.
Because he knew.
He knew not to get into the back of your truck.
Yeah, he knew he was going with Justin. After everyone left, I got emotional. It was horrible.
I would be gutted too.
And the weird thing about that dog is his kennel was right outside my bedroom window. And for months, I heard ghost whines. The dog's not there, but I could still hear him whining outside my window.
No.
Oh, Dan, that's heartbreaking.
I was so glad that he got my dog, though. I was thrilled that Justin got my dog.
Yeah, I get it.
So we thought we'd just wrap up a little bit with what it's like to retire your dog. Justin, now Fido, who used to live in a kennel in 40-degree winters, now is so very happy to live in 70 degrees of your house with your children sleeping on the end of the bed. And now I hear he's described as being a coffee table with legs and a tail.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate with him. He put on some weight, a lot of weight, actually. So I call him fat, dumb, and happy now. They all handle retirement different. And I was worried about Fido because I think safe to say he was pretty high strung.
He had quite a drive.
Yeah, he was an active dog. He was a difficult dog to work because of that drive and how over the top he could be as far as his desire to go out and find the bad guy. So I worried that the slow pace of retirement would be hard for him, and every dog adjusts to it differently. But he's been awesome. I mean, he lives in the house. I've got a 18-month-old that climbs all over him and pulls his ears, and he's not once taken a look at her like, what are you doing? Or like he was anything other than a big brother to her.
Oh, sweet.
I've got, well, my wife has a 3-pound Yorkie, and they get along and play and run around. So I've got, and the Yorkie's meaner than Fido ever was. If the Yorkie was 70 pounds, we'd have to put it down. It's the meanest dog ever, but it's 3 pounds, and so it's okay. But they play and run around, and he'll turn, 14 in August?
Oh, wow.
So he's getting up there, but we've been fortunate that medically, other than just being an old man, he doesn't have any problems. So he gets up a little bit slow these days and kind of creaks when he first starts walking, but he'll still chase a ball, go out and go for walks. He'll still do article searches where you throw a set of keys or something in the grass and tell him to use his nose to find them, and takes him a while, but he'll go out and find it.
This episode is dedicated to Fido, who faithfully served law enforcement in his small town from 2007 to 2016. He passed away 2 days after we recorded this episode. He was 13 and a half. Small Town Dicks is produced by Zibby Allen and Yardley Smith for Paperclip Limited.
This minisode was edited by Soren Bajan, Logan Heftel, Yardley Smith, and Zibby Allen.
Music for the show was composed by John Forrest. Our associate producer is Aaron Gaynor, and our books are cooked and cats wrangled by Ben Cornwell.
If you like what you hear and want to stay up to date with the show, consider visiting us at smalltowndicks.com.
And feel free to subscribe to us on YouTube to see trailers for past and forthcoming episodes.